This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, we talk about UFOs, Sasquatch, well, any cryptozoology. We talk about near-death, afterlife, ghosts, conspiracy theories, all that good stuff, things that go bump in the night. Johnny Manson here with you, and today we have Sherry DeSeuss, author, artist, designer, so many things. I mean, your credentials is like at least two pages long. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've had a very diverse background, and I'm a scientist who bumped into paranormal. Kind of unexpectedly when I was very young.
How does that happen? Because you usually don't intermingle the two.
Right. Well, you know, since an early age, my father was a scientist and worked with the space agency, with General Dynamics, Lockheed Skunk Works, that kind of thing. And so, as an only child, of course I was going to emanate my father and my mother. So being a scientist and working with truth and facts seemed the norm. And then boom, I had a paranormal experience and continued to have paranormal experiences my entire life. So, and as of yesterday, I had a paranormal experience, so it kind of followed me around. I had to deal with it.
We have a lot to talk about.
Sure.
Do you want to talk about your first paranormal experience?
Well, I was pretty young.
Yeah?
Yeah. At an early age, I was having dreams above and beyond my pay grade, if you know what I mean. I was probably about 4 or 5 when a particular dream kept happening over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that dream was of a little girl who was on a train with soldiers, and my dream would kind of morph into another scene where I was, do you know those old-fashioned hut kind of rounded buildings the military has?
Right, yeah.
Sure.
Metal, made of metal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah, okay.
Exactly. Well, I was in front of one of those, and it was white, and I tucked myself underneath the stairs as a military man in thick black boots up to his knees walked up those stairs. I wasn't particularly frightened, but more playful.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Germany.
Wow.
And those soldiers were German soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, I told my parents, and my father said, well, we have German ancestry. Your relatives came over from Germany early, before the war. But we have German ancestry, some.
Mm-hmm.
So that was okay. I thought, oh, okay, I'm dreaming about, you know, great-great-grandma or someone. I just took it as a normal sign.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of my first taste.
Right.
Of what was to be for me.
Now, you lived in a haunted house?
Yes. Yes, I've lived in several haunted houses. I live in one now.
Yeah?
Funny story. I was living in Galveston, Texas. And before I came here to Washington about 2.5 years ago. Actually, it'll be 3 here in this month. So it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the house there that I lived in was, it had visitors. Galveston is one of the most ghost-ridden places on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I seemed to be a magnet. They proved that I had a high electromagnetic field. Some scientist friends of mine, because mm-hmm. I kept blowing out the light bulbs whenever I'd get frustrated or angry. Uh-oh. I'd flip the switch and the damn thing would go pop.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got that kind of reputation.
Could be worse, I guess.
It could be, yes, from what I've heard. But I attract entities.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about my electromagnetic scent
right. Right.
that brings them, because they want to pull energy from me.
Mm-hmm.
They go to energy sources.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to deal with that quite a bit. So I think maybe not always that the house is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just come to me.
Wherever you are, they're going to find you, and there you go.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened when I was living in Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a beach girl from California.
Yeah.
And the house that we lived in, my mother always picked out. She was an interior designer. And in Huntington Beach, not far from the beach, we had a 1906 half of a mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, half means small.
Oh, okay.
It was only a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. But it was half of an original house that was right on the ocean that the brothers separated when their parents died.
Mm.
Okay, you following that?
Right.
All right, so this house was haunted as hell. And we lived four houses away from a crematorium and mortuary that was right on the corner.
Oh, man.
That was a busy house. So, my parents called in the University of California, Irvine scientists on my father's behest so that they could find out why his house was being offended by entities.
Offended.
Exactly. So, and when I was living in Galveston, to get back to that, I knew I was moving. I had to make a choice on where to move. So I knew I wanted to be in Washington. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to be fairly close to the ocean. And I, for 2 years, looked for a house and found it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a home that was built in the 1900s. It's one of the older houses in Hoquiam. It was owned by a lumber baron of some sort.
Wow.
Yeah. And it is magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like 2,600 square feet of heaven.
Wow.
And crumbling walls and needed lots of paint.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, you know, there I am, and there the entities
They followed
are.
You there. Now,
yeah.
Are these the same ghosts or entities that were in other states and other houses, or are you collecting the spirits that are local and they're just have, what is this? Who is this energy? We got to go check this out. Or are they new?
Right, they're new.
Okay.
You're like a beacon
mm-hmm.
if you are like me.
Right.
You're a beacon.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear them.
That would drive me crazy.
See them. Not always. Well, mm-hmm. I turn myself off.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, look, I'm out of service for a while. You can take your problems and hold on to them. You've got time.
Right. Plenty.
But the ones that are like family members
mm-hmm.
or people that cling to you after death, they stick around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father's with me, and
that's got to be kind of comforting, then, right? Right?
It is. It is. Until he opens his mouth and he tells me something that he wants me to know, and it's like, oh, God, didn't you die? Yeah. You know, I found that having a sense of humor about this is what's kept me sane as a scientist.
Yeah.
Because that duality can be pressing.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to think of a strategic way to do a project, and then all of a sudden in my ear I hear, go outside. It's like, no, I'm busy.
I know, I'm doing something.
Right, but I generally do things when I'm yelled at like that. Because there's some kind of emergency involved,
okay.
And I find my dog trapped between two pieces of wood.
Mm-hmm.
He has his paw stuck, and I couldn't hear his cries.
Right.
So I went outside and got him all undone and
wow.
got back to my project. So it can be helpful.
Right. Wow. Have you ever been at the grocery store or just out somewhere and one of these entities with someone else, or just where someone else that you don't know is having a problem, or you needed to tell them something, or does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does, and it doesn't happen often
mm-hmm.
because I lock myself out.
Mm-hmm.
I put on blinders
mm-hmm.
and do daily chores without, you know, really. I don't touch people.
Mm-hmm.
I have a touch no problem.
Yeah.
You know, if I shake your hand, I could see something that you don't want me to see.
Ooh, like my demise or something?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, that's a real problem. And
I
could tell you a story about that sometime. Yeah, I do. I'll go out and sometimes I'll see a shopper
mm-hmm.
and they turn the corner and I'm right after them. I turn the corner and they're gone.
Wow.
It was residual.
Hmm.
There are residual entities that appear for a short period of time
mm-hmm.
because they did that maybe almost every week, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that residual energy...
It's like a memory almost?
It is.
Okay.
It's a memory. It's,
wow.
Exactly. A memory.
So, you were in the Navy?
Yes.
During the Vietnam War?
Yes.
How was that experience for you?
I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I hated it.
Yeah?
It was newfound freedom.
Mm-hmm.
No parents. No laws. No rules except for the Navy, which all made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
They kept me safe and they helped me keep others safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, loose lips.
Thank you for that.
Sink ships. You're welcome. I don't want to say anal retentive. Maybe I should just say I like orderly things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the United States Navy showed me an orderly way to be disorderly. I was a corpsman,
mm-hmm.
and I dealt with traumas, surgeries, emergent things at all times. And I loved that. I'd get in a helicopter and we'd take off and I'd jump out onto a mountainside and kind of almost half roll down to help a soldier that needed to be moved properly to protect his neck.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that one. And I had help with some Marines, and we got them on a cot. We got them all situated. We put them on a hovering helicopter. And I happened to be in a skirt, in a uniform that had a skirt
mm-hmm.
and a top with shorter sleeves, and my boondocks, you know, my black, real low-heeled shoes. Yeah. Real pretty. And these two Marines are grabbing me by the buttocks
mm-hmm.
and putting me on a hovering helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And, I took care of the patient. And as I'm coming out of the helicopter after we landed and going to bring him to the hospital, I see press. Apparently, Captain Luisi of our... our camp
mm-hmm.
was bringing photographers through, and my hair at that time was down to my waist, well, similar that it is now, and my hair was flying all over the place. I had, you know, the whole MASH unit look.
Yeah.
And I ended up on the front page of the paper. I got in a little bit of hot problems with Captain Luisi.
Yeah?
Yeah, but it was worth it. Yeah, those times were wonderful.
And, you know, culture was a lot different back then, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
How was it different being a woman in the military in the Vietnam War as opposed to today? What are some of those differences?
Well, first of all, they wouldn't let me carry a gun. Can't imagine a woman without
right.
a gun. Come
right.
on. And although I was trained with them mm-hmm. and actually did very well at sharpshooting,
mm-hmm.
but I was like 118 pounds at the time, and I shot off a 44 and landed on my butt, and they go, "That's it for you."
Oh, no.
You know, a lot of women say that they had issues.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I my whole experience with being in the military was good. I wasn't disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't treated like the little lady, but mm-hmm. I didn't act like one either. I was a tomboy. Mm-hmm. Always been a tomboy. And, you know, you put a pair of boots on me and some, you know, a military jacket, and I'm gone.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Let's play.
You'd be a good Sasquatch researcher. Yeah?
I'm a good researcher for anything.
Right on.
Yeah.
I understand that you're studying to be a MUFON researcher.
I am. MUFON is that mutual...
UFO network.
UFO
yeah.
network.
Yeah.
And they are international. What brought me to MUFON in the first place were my experiences of seeing unidentified flying objects,
mm-hmm.
both with a telescope. I had a 12.5-inch Meade refractor telescope on an auto guidance system.
Wow.
And a nice
that
Canon
just sounds
camera.
Fancy.
I know. Doesn't it sound good?
Uh-huh.
I had it. No, let me rephrase that. My husband had it made
okay.
by Meade in Irvine.
Wow, he had it
I think
it
they
Meade.
Were in Costa Mesa at the time in California. They're now in Irvine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that time it cost about $3,000.
Wow.
So it was a big investment, but we had moved up to the mountains.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, about an hour away from Bakersfield in the Sequoia National Forest.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we set up a deck, stabilized it, threw up this Meade telescope, and I mean, we were out there every night.
Mm-hmm.
We just love seeing all of the planets, but we would find and we would observe aircraft that mm-hmm. wasn't. And so I had those experiences.
Do you recall the first time you ever saw, like, a UFO, an unidentified flying object?
Yes. It was the first time that I realized that it wasn't from our planet.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen them before, but I didn't know what I was seeing. I was too young.
Mm-hmm.
I was about 12, and in our cul-de-sac of homes, the neighbors came out during the day, was on a weekend, and they were pointing at the sky. We all looked up. People kept coming out of the homes, and there was a tic-tac, cigar-shaped mm-hmm. metal object in the sky, slowly going across from east towards the west.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it was on its way towards the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And the older adults were saying, that's a UFO. That's that's what we've been reading about.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 65,
mm-hmm.
66, something like that. Yeah, wow. I was going into seventh grade that year. So,
mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and it did make a mark.
Yeah.
My father was part of the space program, so he used to talk about everything space.
Yeah.
That was his life, and he didn't even bother to come outside for it.
Yeah. He just, like, knew.
That
yeah.
told me a lot. That was my first inkling that my father knew a lot more than he professed.
Did he ever share anything with you about what he was doing when he was working?
He did.
Can you share it? No, because I'm
he's
assuming.
He's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Okay.
So, except for when he's in my head.
Right. Right. Nobody can reprimand him right now but you. Right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, settle down, Dad. I was his only child,
mm-hmm.
and I was as close as he was going to get to a boy,
yeah.
as a tomboy.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, he would share things that he could
mm-hmm.
at the time. And then, of course, I would bust into their bedroom, you know,
mm-hmm.
unannounced.
Hmm.
Yeah, that kind of kid. And he'd be working on a project, and he was the guy that would take electronics and components and bite-sized pieces and special modules that were developed by his company
mm-hmm.
and place them inside of the global positioning satellite so that
wow.
it would all fit into the chassis he was given.
Wow.
And it had to work.
Right.
And nothing could overheat.
Oh, man.
So, you know, I gathered a lot. I absorbed a lot from my father. And the year that he dragged us off to Ohio was right after UFOs had taken care of our Minuteman missiles at, I guess it was, what, Newark Air Force Base, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I know those two were his destinations.
Mm-hmm.
And he was to fix all the problems that had occurred during that time.
So what did the UFOs do to our Minuteman missiles? Just, like, you know, destroy them or deactivate them? Or?
They made them inactive.
Okay. They shut them down.
They shut them down. And only someone like my father, who was called in, could fix them.
Wow.
They were melted. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
We are talking with Sherry DeSeuss. More coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, and we talk about the weird, and we have been talking about some strange things with Sherry DeSeuss, author, artist, designer, veteran. If I was to just rattle off everything you've done here, it would have taken up at least the second segment of the show. So we'll just stop it right there. Are you having a good time so far?
I am. This is great.
We actually have a question.
Oh.
Our buddy Russ Wiedela has a question for you.
My name is Russell Wiedela. I'm a local from Raymond, Washington, and I've experienced a lot of metaphysical things. One of the things that I've experienced quite often is electronic manipulation. In fact, I've experienced that within just the last month. I tried to turn on a 24/7 recorder, and they would not let me do it. That's all I'm going to say about that. That story has a little bit more to it, but I'll just leave it there. Well, my question is, knowing that your dad had something to do with Minuteman missiles after E.T. had shut them down, I wonder what he found when he looked into those, into the missiles, what they manipulated in there. Did they, you know, arc something over and burn a circuit out? Or was it just pure manipulation and there was no visual or visible thing done to the missile itself? That's my question.
That was a good question.
It sure was. And, yeah, I think I touched on that a little bit earlier, just a little bit.
Right.
So, Russ, the first part of your question, if it was a question, was about electric manipulation by what I suspect you meant as an entity, a ghost, a specter, a phantom, and or interdimensional. One of the things that these entities do is they use the energy in batteries to communicate with you. So if you want to record either vocally or with video, with vocal, you're going to need to have extra batteries because entities need to power up before they can give you their best at communication. So that's number one. Number two, you asked about what kind of shape the Minuteman missiles were in the different bases in Ohio. Well, my father did mention that. He said that they were melted, fused. The circuits were had to be replaced. He spent an entire summer in Ohio and then was asked to stay for good in Ohio to further repair, teach others to repair, and to, well, basically be there in case it happened again. My father refused. I was going into, I think, seventh grade, and that, for some reason, that meant something to my parents. And he did train individuals on how to deal with the situation if it happened again. But because it was so hush-hush and so secretive, this is not something he could tell individuals he was even working with at the bases of how they got that way. That was kept at a very high level. And I only learned this after I became an adult.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know if they paid him well? Because it seems like he was an awful important person in to the country in that regard of what he was able to do. He could probably just name his price, right?
Well, he was, say, employee.
Yeah.
And as an employee, he was relegated to situations and places at a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he'd take his work home with him, because they had a project going to space or something and he had to do it in a hurry, instead of having to stay all day and all night in his office,
mm-hmm.
he would take his work home, and he was followed by a black vehicle with men in dark suits.
Wow.
Who sat in the vehicle. And at that time, I couldn't see them because the windows were darkened.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't remember anybody else having those kind of windows back then.
Right.
But they did.
it
was really interesting. And, I mean, I was 12 years old when he brought this stuff home.
Wow.
And he had all of these different modules made out of a material that I don't I don't know even to this day what it was, but it was, it felt a little bit like plastic and metal at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really weird. And it was sealed with this fine white kind of powdery stuff. I don't know. Anyway, these modules had really odd shapes. They had, it looked like somebody took a round ball of wood and just sliced off with a laser different sections, and that section was totally different from another module that he had. So every one of those, I pinned him down on this one. I said, look, you have a bunch of really pretty colored, you know, mod or whatever they are, Dad. What is it? And he says, well, inside each one of these is something that works with everything else. All of these pieces have to be fit into a small space. I'm the one that has to figure out how this all goes in there.
Wow.
And I said, well, what about those guys that are outside? He says, they're there to make sure I'm safe and you're safe. I pushed him on that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, they want to make sure that these modules are safe.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, yeah. Hmm. He used to bring home friends.
Wow, that is fascinating.
Yeah, I didn't feel like my father or our family was any different than the nice neighborhood we lived in. We weren't extremely, that I knew of, wealthy,
mm-hmm.
but we were definitely comfortable.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
You've been a scuba diver, you've sailed, you've piloted small aircraft, you've done commercials, modeled, acting, photographer, astronomer. What have you not done? How about that? That's probably easier. Just tell me what you haven't done.
I can tell you what I haven't done again. You know, anything that I want to do, I usually just set my mind to it and do it.
That's what it seems like reading this here. It just seems like, well, she felt like scuba diving, so, well, she learned to scuba dive. Well, she wanted to fly aircraft. Well, she went and flew aircraft.
And I want to talk on the radio, and boom, here I am.
Here you are. Wow. Okay. MUFON. We were talking about MUFON. I understand that there were some Ocean Shores sightings.
Mm.
Some strange things. I actually saw it first on our buddy Bill Puckett, UFOs Northwest, and who used to live here in Grace Harbor, and then he moved, I think, to Montana or something for some reason. You guys just, you special people just move around, just nomadic or something.
Yeah, I'm a traveler.
So can you talk about what these sightings were?
Well, I can tell you what I know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because online there is a Grace Harbor communication between neighbors and neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our neighbors spied a donut-shaped UFO in the sky being either tossed or moving like it was very flexible through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And it stayed up longer and at a higher altitude than one would suspect that an item like that would.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a videotape of it, and it was strange.
Wasn't a drone, right?
Right. It was. I can tell you what I didn't think it was. It wasn't a drone. It wasn't a metallic donut-shaped balloon,
mm-hmm.
or a balloon of any kind that I could tell.
Or a triangle?
No, okay. No. None of the shapes that one would expect with either aircraft or a UFO,
mm-hmm.
at all. There's a theory that there are organic animals that live in the atmosphere.
I was going to ask you, was it organic? And you answered it before I asked it.
Yeah. there are theories by scientists, and I try to keep things very science, that perhaps there are organic animals or organisms that are large like that, that live in our upper atmosphere and stay up there. Now, if something were to be ill or injured in some manner...
Hit by an airplane or something?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, just like a bird. Yeah. Then perhaps that could have been an organic mass of some kind. MUFON is really good about finding out, investigating, you know, what it could or could not be. But if it's organic... and it landed somewhere, unless someone finds it.
Right.
We just won't know. Organic matter has come to the Earth many, many times. There's a gelatin that is found in some places that actually falls from the sky. And nobody knows why, but it happens often in certain spots in the world.
It happened in, I want to say, Elma or McCleary some years ago. And I don't know if they found out what it was, but it like rained. It rained this weird slimy gelatin stuff.
Right.
And I think, now I could be wrong on this. I think they figured out it wasn't an airliner dumping its... it's toilet.
Right.
And, but it was like living biological matter.
Yes.
Still.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll find the story and maybe we could talk about it next week. That's just, it's weird, isn't it?
Yes, it is weird, but it's because we don't understand it yet.
Right. Everything that you don't understand is weird. Oh, that's weird. That person's weird.
Exactly.
I don't understand them. They're strange.
That's right. And strange and weird and unusual things is what the paranormal is all about.
You know what my first nickname was when I moved to this area? Weirdo John. Yeah, that wasn't a scarring. No, anyway. It's all good.
That just means that you were above normal.
Right.
Right?
Making lemonade, right?
Absolutely. That's what we all have to do.
I have seen, you know, going to work so early in the morning, I've seen some strange things. I always, when I go out my front door, I always look up, you know, and if there's stars out, I kind of just look there for, you know, a minute, see what's going on. But then I've seen weird things over ocean shores. like a light suspended and then just suddenly dropped down over the ocean and just like it was hanging there and then all of a sudden it just dove into the ocean straight down, no zigzag, no nothing, just boom, like a light bulb that just fell off and just fell. Things like that.
So you watched a submersible UFO.
Something.
That's not uncommon, especially for a California beach girl.
Yeah?
Right off the coast of California, in the Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego regions, this has been sighted for years. And there are those that were in the Navy who routinely saw submersible UFOs coming in and out of the water. And in fact, there are videos of it.
I hear rumor, and maybe you can clarify this or debunk it or whatever, that there are like bases, like alien bases in the water out there, right off the coast of Washington, and probably Oregon and California also. What do you think?
Why do you think I became a scuba diver?
Touché.
Yeah, I have dove often off the coast of California. I first started doing it with Navy SEALs, friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they taught me some of the techniques to dive deep and mixing gases and that kind of thing. I dove off of California, Catalina, off the Isthmus, which is the other side of the island that doesn't have the city.
Mm-hmm.
And you can land by planes with pontoons.
Mm. Okay.
Over there. They also have a really good jazz band that plays. Anyway, and their pool tables are straight. So I would scuba dive over there, and it is a preserve. A natural preserve where you can't kill fish.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem with trying to find ETs underwater is you can't see anything, blankety blank, underwater in California off the coast.
Oh, yeah?
It's like 10-foot divisibility is great. You know, I had a heck of a lot better opportunities in Hawaii when I lived there.
Is it because the temperature? Is it because the pollution? Or
no, the thermocline in the ocean is relatively moderate.
I don't even know what that is.
I'm
sorry.
There is a warm wave of water,
mm-hmm.
current, they call it the thermocline, that when you hit it, that's like a really, it's a nicer, warmer temperature.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the ocean, the Pacific Ocean is cool,
mm-hmm.
not as cold as at the Atlantic. So I don't think that's the problem. The problem is we have oil rigs all over Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
It's been that way for years, and so the visibility of oil and debris and sand and all the people boating, you know. If you go on the backside of the island, it's better, but not great. So you have to use specialized equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not fortunate enough, but my father did see indications of UFOs under ocean.
Really?
Yes.
Did
he was
say?
A sailor on a sailboat, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Gypsy. And with an S-E-A at the end. And he and my mother went to Santa Barbara Isles for vacation. And on the backside of Santa Barbara Island, lights were coming up from underneath the sea. And my father was the only one moored in this bay. And he talked about and wrote down all about that experience and how he got the heck out of there when it didn't go away after 2 hours.
Wow.
And
it freaked him out.
Not my dad.
No?
No.
Oh, I thought you implied that it did because he got out of there.
Well, my mother was there.
Okay.
And she's pretty hardy.
Mm-hmm.
But being an East Coast girl, but my father realized that he needed to document, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
He radioed, which he did. And then he got out of that bay and moved to a different bay and moored there because they were not going to get any sleep.
Okay.
The lights were too bright.
Oh.
There were too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And He just knew it was time to get out of there. He didn't want to subject my mother or himself to whatever was going to come up.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know what's going to come up.
Right. Now, we've had guests like the alien hunter Daryl Sims and folks that say, you know, some of these aliens, if they do in fact exist, might not be all that friendly. And then I have people like my mom, God bless her soul, she thinks that every alien is a warm, loving entity that is here to help us. What say you?
I say you go somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
There are individuals, entities, aliens that are. I don't think any of them are friendly, as you would try to put that emotion or feeling. I think they're willing to be helpful.
Yeah.
For our species. And then there are those who want to take from our species.
Like our species has taken from this planet, right?
Well, that as well. Okay, figure it this way. Earth is a petri dish of various bacteria and viruses and fungi. And these different aliens from different planets are coming here and saying, ooh, I want to look at that bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that one's moving, squish, squish. Let's take a look at this and find out what it can do. You know, they were checking scientifically our intelligence, our mobility. Do we have a soul? That's very important because apparently there's a finite amount of souls and they're very useful whenever they're cloning. So apparently they want to test us for that. And there are some that want to use us as slaves.
That'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. Sherry, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure.
You'll come back?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Did you have a good time?
I did have a good time.
Man.
It's nice to talk about things from someone that has an open mind.
Right. Well, we try, you know. So if you'd like to listen to this episode or archived episodes, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.